Okay, so I figured that as it is Asar B'Tevet, it's worth talking about Asar B'Tevet. I find that most of the Shirim Asar B'Tevet go the same direction, so I hope I add something different to the conversations. Like, I go on Wayutera, and it's just like, doesn't matter who I listen to. Honestly, the way most Shirim start on Asar B'Tevet, and I guess I'll start that way, even though my conclusions can be slightly different, is that, if you skip for a moment to number 12 here, is a very strange comment introduced by the Avud Raham. So we know that normally fast days, with the exception of Yom Kippur, we do not fast on Shabbat, because it's antithetical to Shabbat to be fasting on Shabbat. Why exactly that's true is not totally clear, but presumably because either there's an obligation of Oneg, according to some of the Midrashei Halacha in Baal Otcha, there's also a Chiyuv of Simcha, parallel to what we have on Yom Tov. Add that to the fact that most of our fast days, again, with the exception of Yom Kippur, are only Dirabanan, and only rabbinic at best, right? Our fast days may be less than that. They may be a minhag nowadays, with the exception possibly of Tisha B'Av, maybe even Tisha B'Av. So we waive them, right? Either we push them off a day, but we don't fast on Shabbos. But the Avud Raham says that theoretically there's one exception to that rule, in addition to Yom Kippur, I mean, one of the rabbinic fasts, which you would fast Yom Kippur, and that is Asar B'Tevet. Now, it doesn't happen in our calendar, because, you know, once we moved from deciding the month based on witnesses, in which case it's fluid, and we moved to a set calendar, so we set up a whole bunch of rules that prevent Rosh Hashanah from falling in a day we don't want to, and Pesach falling in a day we don't want to, etc. And because of all that manipulation, so one of the things that happened was that Asar B'Tevet can't fall on Shabbat. But the Avud Raham writes in 12 that if it had, v'chiluk yesh b'neihem, she'arba'at samot heim nidachim lefamim kishechalu b'shabbat, these four rabbinic fast days are pushed off if they would fall on Shabbat, which again, Tisha B'Av does and is pushed off very often, as does obviously Shavuot or B'Tamuz, because they're always on the same day of the week. But Chutz B'Asar B'Tevet, She'ein Ochal Le'olam B'Shabbat. Asar B'Tevet doesn't fall on Shabbat. Aval Uchal Lefamim B'Yom Shishi Metanin Bo B'Yom. He says it does fall on Friday, and then we fast. V'afilu Hayachal B'Shabbat. But if it were possible that it would fall on Shabbat,
I think I have
Sabiyatim
for me.
Okay. You could not push off Asar B'Tevet mipnei shenayim arbo be'etzem ayom hazeh kemo b'yom ha-kippurim u'shara tzomot einam chalim le'olam b'yom shishi. So the Avud Raham says the exception to all rules is Asar B'Tevet, that had it fallen on Shabbat, it would be like Yom Kippur, and we would fast even on Shabbos. Now he notes, again, according to our calendar, that can never happen, but he says there's still a practical implication to this, which is that we fast for a little bit on Friday, right? That we actually don't push off the fast on Friday. Friday, normally we try to avoid fast on Friday, right? Hence, if...
Has Asar B'Tevet ever been on a Friday?
It happens actually.
Recently?
It happened like 2 years ago. Right, it's a weird thing, right? Because then you don't eat, right?
You don't break the fast until after your kiddush.
Right. Because you go to shul, you wait till it says, right? I mean, it's the thing. I mean, the thing with Asar B'Tevet is that we barely feel it, right? Asar B'Tevet is like it's a nothing fast. It's so short, right? You get up, saying, like, my kids will be up anyways. Like, I was up this morning, had a drink of water, and then you break the fast and it starts at like quarter after five. It ends
Why
at.
Why are your kids up that early?
Yeah, kids. That is a question I ask. That's a question I ask myself all the time. But unfortunately, that is often the case. We they have to get up by six. So they get up a bit earlier. They're still getting used to this. Like last year in Toronto, school started at 9. Now they're on the bus at 7:10. Yeah, so they want to have breakfast. And they want
you
know.
Did you meet all the others?
I came back. We were here before, but we only came back in the summer. So my kids have not been in school in Israel. So now they're getting used to the 6 o'clock in the morning.
Wake up. He's getting up really early, way before the fast, and then it ends really early.
Oh, he's flying. Yeah.
He flew.
So the fast ends in like.
I'm gonna be up really early. I'll eat regular and then early.
Yeah, well, it extends it that way. Coming back this way, it's great. It like it disappears. So we barely feel the fast. But the Avodraham tells us that theoretically it's the most stringent, and he notes it doesn't actually fall on Shabbat, though he says if it did, we would fast. But it does fall on Friday, and you know if you skip to. 18, for a moment, you'll see the Magen Avraham quotes this Avodraham and notes that the reason that we don't have, the reason that we fast the Sereb Tevet on Friday is because of this Avodraham, right? Even though we don't paskin, we may not paskin like the Avodraham for Shabbos, for Friday, we do. Now, nobody really, you know, everyone tries to figure out this Avodraham, like starting with the Beit Yosef in number 13, right? The Beit Yosef says, V'lo yadati minayin loze, right? I just don't get it. Like, right? I just don't know where this comes from. And the truth is that it's not at all agreed upon. And I gave you three Rishonim who don't accept this, right? Rashi in 14 tells you, V'chein tisha ba'av shechalot b'shabbat, v'hu adin l'shivasar b'tamuz, u'lasara b'tevet. Right? Rashi says explicitly, tisha b'av is pushed off of Shabbos, shivasar b'tamuz is pushed off of Shabbos, and asara b'tevet is pushed off from Shabbat. And the Rambam says the same. And then, as Rav Asher Weiss points out, in sort of a different type of proof, he notes that the Ibn Ezra also felt this way. How do we know? Right? The Ibn Ezra doesn't really write halachic works. So how do we know? Where so far, all we've introduced is the problem that the Avodraham thinks that Asar B'Tevet is unique, that it is the one fast besides for Yom Kippur that we would keep on Shabbat. Would it be able to fall on Shabbat? So Rashi doesn't agree, Rambam doesn't agree. The Ibn Ezra doesn't agree. How do we know the Ibn Ezra doesn't agree? So the Ibn Ezra doesn't write halachic works. But
is he down here?
He's number 16. He writes songs. Right? He wrote songs. In addition to his Perush on the Torah, he wrote songs. He wrote Zmirot because he was a poet. And one of them is Ki Eshmera Shabbat. And in Ki Eshmera Shabbat, it says, Rashum Bedara El, Chok El Skanav, Bola Roch Lechem Alpin Evonav, Al Kain Litanot Bo. So right, so he says, the law is from God that you have to have bread. Al Kain Litanot Bo Alpin Evonav, Asur, Livad, Me Yom Kippur Avoni. And therefore, fasting is forbidden except for Yom Kippur. Right, which is D'oraita, which is biblical. Right, so you see that Ibn Ezra also did not agree. Right, this is, I like this proof from Rashi Weiss. It's a
different.
It's different, right? You know. We forget that the piyutim, right, that these mirot are piyutim written by serious people, whether they be Rabbi Yehuda Halevi, Ibn Ezra, Moshe Salach, whoever it might be. Right, these are written by serious people, and therefore, if you pay attention to the words. Sometimes you'll learn halacha. Usually you'll learn more Tanakh than you will halacha, but Tanakh is good. It's great. You know, at this point I've taught my kids love Tanakh, but in general my kids love Daniel. They love Sefer Daniel. My 3-year-old is quite he likes teaching people Daniel. They're usually surprised that my 3-year-old is conversant in Daniel, but he's quite conversant in Daniel, and therefore my kids also love the fact that Kari Bon Olam is an extensive commentary on Sefer Daniel, which I know most 3-year-olds don't know that, but I've taught this to my 3-year-old.
I learned that with Abigail about 5 years ago,
so but it is, right, the whole thing, right, that's part of why it's written in Aramaic, unlike Hebrew as the rest of them. But the theme of Sefer Daniel is Mashiach, right, is the end of days. And some of the key images are the image of the lion's den. And hence, Kari Bon Olam is about, right, mixes those and writes things like V'apek Yat Amech Migo Galuta, right, you should take them out of Galut, right? But we use the image of Mipum Aryavata, right, from the mouth of the lion, right, which is a mix of the themes and the images of Sefer Daniel.
Can he sing that as well?
What?
Can he actually
sing? Yes, my kids also know Kari Bon. Yes. Yes.
As a speech therapist,
though. Yeah. They get there, right? They're afraid. Yeah, but they're getting there. Like, it's, as a 3-year-old would sing it. So normally you learn Tanakh things, but the truth is that sometimes you learn halachic things as well, because the people writing them had positions. So whether or not we actually agree with the Avodah Zarah is an open question. But what I want to do is try to figure out what does the Avodah Zarah even mean? Like, what is it about Asarah B'Teveit? Because even if we don't agree with him halachically, right, what is it that he saw in Asarah B'Teveit? What is it that's unique about Asarah B'Teveit that might be, in a certain sense, even more stringent than Tisha B'Av, which is counterintuitive. Okay, so like I said, you know, this is like one of the standard way of starting this, Shiurim on Asarah B'Teveit. And first, what I'm going to do is do, you know, the summary of what I hear, you know, every time I listen to a shiur. I listened to another one on my way to work this morning, and basically, more or less, it said the same as every other shiur on the topic. But at the end, I want to go back to the Tanakh and argue that the Avodah Zarah was onto something, but not what anybody thought he was onto. But if you actually read the psukim, you realize he was onto something quite powerful. Okay, so why would this be? So, the first thing, let's do a little bit of background here.
Isn't Asarah B'Teveit when they surrounded
it? Right, so Asarah B'Teveit, when is Asarah B'Teveit? So now if we go through, let's go back to the beginning. So we have four fast days that are based on the Churban HaBayit. Right, chronologically speaking, they go Asarah B'Teveit, Shavasar B'Tammuz, Tisha B'Av, Tzom Gedaliah. Right? Right, first they surround the city on Asarah B'Teveit, then they breach the walls on Shavasar B'Tammuz, then the Beit HaMikdash is destroyed on Tisha B'Av, and then after all of that is done, so Tzom Gedaliah is the end of Jewish sovereignty, because right even after Churban HaBayit, so Jews are left in Israel and sort of a puppet government with limited autonomy, but then when they can't get along with the Babylonian appointed puppet governor, Gedaliah, and they kill him, so they have to go into full galut because Bavel realizes that even the limited autonomy they gave the Jews was not a good idea, and therefore that ends the sovereignty of the Jews in that period entirely, and that's Gedaliah. But as the Gemara already notes, there is a slight problem here, which is that, right, as we know, the fast days commemorate multiple events, and part of that is that they commemorate the parts of the Churban in both Bayit Rishon and Bayit Sheni. So Tisha B'Av, conveniently, I guess, is the same, right? The Beit HaMikdash was destroyed both in the first and the second on the 9th of Av. But that's not true, per se. What? Right, so it's the 9th, it's the 10th, whatever exactly it is. It starts on the 9th, it ends on the 10th, or it starts at the end of the 9th, and it burns through the 10th, or exactly how it is. But basically, right, we commemorated both on the 9th. Again, right, a Shiur on Tisha B'Av would have to get in why is it the 9th if most of the burning was on the 10th, and, you know, things like that. But more or less, it's the same day, and it's commemorated on that day. That's not true, however, of the other ones. Because while the timeline is similar, the days are not exactly the same between Bayit Rishon and Bayit Sheni, where instead of it being the 17th of Tammuz, for example, it is the 9th of Tammuz. So then the question becomes, okay, so...
The 17th is for Bayit Rishon.
The 17th is for Bayit Sheni, right? The 9th is for Bayit Rishon. Right, so the question, I think I got that one right. So the question then becomes, okay, well, are we commemorating both? Right, are we commemorating both? And that seems to emerge from an interesting linguistic point that is made about the fasts in Zechariah, which the Gemara deals with in number one. But if you want to look at the Pasuk first in Zechariah, number two, in number two, Zechariah describes the fast. He says, "Kol Mara the night Tzvaot, Tzoma Revi'i, Vitzoma Chamishi, Vitzoma Shvi'i, Vitzoma Asiri, Yelevet Yudah, L'Sason L'Simcha L'Moadim Tovim V'Emet V'Shalom Ehavu." Right, the fasts eventually will become days of rejoicing and holidays, and he calls the fast of the fourth, the fast of the fifth, the fast of the seventh, and the fast of the tenth. Now, what are those? So, we would assume that this is what the Gemara is going to question. The fast of the fourth is the fast of the fourth month, which is Tammuz. The fifth is Av. The seventh is Tishrei. And the tenth is Teveit. So we would assume, based on what we have in our calendar, that would mean Shavasar B'Tammuz, Tisha B'Av, the third of Tishrei, which, okay, is when we celebrate Tzom Gedalia, even though it should be on the first, because it happened over Rosh Hashanah, which is going to be part of the key to this as well, and then the 10th of Teveit. So if you look now at number one, the Gemara is in the middle, the Mishnah and the Gemara are dealing with the calendar in general. So the Mishnah notes that Al Shisha Chadashim Ashluchin Yotzin, 6 months out of the year, the court bothered sending out messengers to tell people it was Rosh Chodesh so that they could mark the holidays in that month on the right day, right? It doesn't really matter in Cheshvan if you know whether Cheshvan started on, you know, Thursday or Friday. It doesn't really make a difference. As long as you find out when Kislev is, then you'll be able to deal with Hanukkah, but you don't have to deal with Cheshvan. What's the worst that'll happen, you know, if you were 2 weeks away from Yerushalayim, so you didn't find out when Rosh Chodesh was. Okay, you said Yalav Yavo on the wrong day, right? It's not the end of the world. So the Mishnah says on Nisan v'pnei Pesach, right? Nisan we have to be worried because we want people to know when Pesach is. Al Av v'pnei Atanit, and Av we need to know when Tisha B'Av is. Al Elul v'pnei Rosh Hashanah. Right? Obviously, you can't send a messenger out on Rosh Hashanah to hope that people figure out when Rosh Hashanah is. You have to send it out in Elul so they can figure it out, and then end up with 2 days anyways because you're still going to be unsure. But if you didn't even know when Elul was, you'd be off by even more days. Al Tishrei v'pnei Takanan Amoadot, and then we have the rest of the holidays and other issues that depend on Tishrei. Al Kislev mipnei Chanukah, al Adar mipnei Purim. Ukshahaya Beit Hamikdash Kayam Yotzin Af al Iyar mipnei Pesach Katan. And when the Beit Hamikdash stood, so we also needed to know when Pesach Katan or Pesach Sheni happened. So then the Gemara says, okay, v'lifke unami atamos v'teveit. Right, if we send out a messenger every time there's some sort of day that must be marked in the month, so what about Tammuz? We have a fast on the 17th. And what about Tevet when we have a fast on the 10th? The Amar of Chana Bar Bizna, Amar of Shimon Chasida, Mai Dichtiv, Ko Amar Adonai Tzvaot, Tzom Merevi, Vitzom HaChamishi, Vitzom HaShvi'i, Vitzom HaAsiri, Yeh Levet Yudah L'Sason U'L'Simcha. Because what does this Pasuk mean in Zechariah? Karilu Tzom V'Karilu Sason U'Simcha. Because the Gemara says, how could they be both fast days and days of rejoicing? So the Gemara says, Bizman Sheyesh Shalom, when there is peace, or ultimate peace, perhaps, you l'sason l'simcha. So we'll turn these fast days into holidays. Ein Shalom, Tzom. But when there is no peace, so then we fast. And then the Gemara raises several different possibilities. So skip down to the next paragraph. So Tanya, Amar Rabbi Shimon, Arba Dvarim Haya Rabbi Akiva Doresh Ve'en Ani Doresh Kmoto. There were four things Rabbi Akiva understood in the Psukim that I disagreed about. So Merivii, Zet Tisha B'Tammuz, Shavo Hufkayer. The first thing was that he thought that the Tzomer Revi'i was not Shivasar B'Tammuz, but the ninth, which is when it was destroyed, when the city was breached in the first Beit HaMikdash. Ne'emar B'Chodesh HaRevi'i, B'Tisha L'Chodesh, B'Chazek HaRav Ba'ir, B'Loya Lechem La'amaretz, V'Tiba Ka'ir. They didn't have food, and the city was breached. V'Amai Karile Revi'i, Sir Bikiva says, why is it Revi'i? Revi'i L'Chadashim. So the fifth is simply the fifth month is Av. That's Tisha B'Av. That's fine. What's the fast of the seventh? That's the third of Tishrei, which is Tzom Gedalia. Umi harago Yishmael ben Netanya harago lelamedcha sheshkulad mitatan shel tzadikim k'sirfat Beit Elokeinu. And this teaches you that the death of a tzadik is equivalent to the burning of the Beit HaMikdash, because they both get fast days. V'amai kari leshvi'i, shvi'i lachadashim, it's the seventh month. And so ma'asiri zasara b'teveit, shebo samach melech bavel al Yerushalayim, shenemar v'hiyed var Hashem elai b'shanat tshiit, b'chodesh asiri v'asor l'chodesh lemor. Because he said to me, right, God said to me on the ninth year, in the tenth month, and the tenth day, telling me, this is Yechezkel, Ben Adam, K'tov Lecha, Shem Hayom, Et Etzem Hayom Hazeh, Samach Melch Bavel El Yerushalayim, by my Kari Le Asiri, Asiri Lechadashim, again, it's the tenth month. Okay, it should have been written in its order, but we just do it by the months, not by the chronological order, because obviously Asar B'Tevet is the first chronologically, it's the last in the calendar. And I disagree. Shebo ba shmua legola shehuchta ha'ir. But I disagree, and I say, no, the fast of the 10th month isn't Asara B'Tevet, but it's Chamisha B'Tevet, which is when they heard in Galut about the destruction of the city. Sh'ne'emar v'hi b'shtei asrei shana ba'asiri b'chamisha l'chodesh l'galotenu ba'alai ha'palit mi'ushalayim le'mor ukta ha'ir. Because we found out on the 5th of the 10th month, meaning on the 5th of Tevet, someone came from Yerushalayim and managed to convey the message of what was going on in Yerushalayim. Vasiru yom ha'shmua ki yom sreifa. And they made that day, the day they heard about a destruction, like the day of the destruction itself, right? I mean, ad hayom, we have such a halacha, just is very, very relevant. Right? The halacha is an avelut, right? Real avelut, right? Most of what, when we Sitchiva, unfortunately, is what is called a shmua krova. Right? Now, in our interconnected world, shmua krova is the norm. What's a shmua krova? A shmua krova means you hear when someone dies in real time. So then you sitchiva. But 200 years ago, right, it was very common that people did not hear in real time. And they heard what was called a shmua rechoka. Right? It could have been their child. It could have been their parent. And they heard 6 months later, 12 months later, 2 years later. Right? So we have halachot where you sit Shiva, a certain extent of Shiva, depending on how long it's been, on the day of the Shmia, or the day that you hear.
They heard about Korban Bais.
Only on the 5th of Tevet, right? So that was their day, and then...
That's a long time after.
Yeah, it's quite a long time, right? Meaning it's a combination of travel and the fact that this is the middle of a destruction, right? It's the palit, right? The person who survived and managed to, you know, it's not like... Right, it's not like the normal case where you send out a messenger on a horseback to convey a message. This is the guy who managed to survive, ran away, right? You know, walked through the desert and makes it to the Golah.
So he's understanding us same month, different date.
Correct. Exactly. So so this Gemara is a bit strange, right? This Gemara tells us that there was a machloket about what these fast days were all about. They all agreed on the months. They all agreed that's what's going on. But the question was, which day? What exactly are commemorating within the month? Now, add that to the fact that, as I noted, one of the strange things about these fast days is that we take it as a given that we're commemorating both destruction of the Beit HaMikdash. That's the way we've been taught. Because we know that by Tisha B'Av, that is what we're doing. But that gets problematic, because as we know, that's not true for the other holidays. So,
but don't we ascribe to Asar B'Tevet so many things in history?
Oh, for sure, everything we do, right? Asar B'Tevet, the Septuagint, right? The Septuagint, right? The Targum Shivim, right? It's translated into Greek, and Ezra dies, and all types
and
of... Right, and then obviously on Asar B'Tevet, and then on Tisha B'Av we have... You know, everything from the Meraglim through both destruction of the Beit HaMikdash and Shivasar B'Tammuz, right? Each of them has a million different things. But here, it's not even right, right? Meaning Asar B'Tevet, so, you know, there were things that happened on the 5th, there were things that happened on the 10th. In terms of the main things we celebrate, the main things we commemorate on Shivasar B'Tammuz, in Bayit Sheni it was the 17th, but in Bayit Rishon it's the 9th, right? So... Are we just saying, look, we've given up on commemorating the destruction of the first Beit HaMikdash? We only, you know, on Tisha B'Av, it's the catch-all, but everything else is built around the second Beit HaMikdash, right? What exactly is going on? So the Minchat Chinuch, I'll skip around a little bit here to try to sort of get.
The emphasis on the second would be because
it's the most recent. Right, and the destruction of the first is undone by the building of the second, and then that's clear why it's on those right. It's clear why our primary dates are picked from the second, because that's the one we're currently in Galut from. The Minchat Chinuch, however, number 9, introduces a theory that sort of mixes this all up a little bit, and he says as follows. He says, I don't think any of that's true. He says, "Hanir lefiya niyadati v'nafkamina lididan gamkein didarba didalada atzomot halalu midivrei kabbalah ein nikba lehem yom miyuchad." So I don't think any of this is true. He said, "Look at the pasuk. The pasuk tells you tzom erevi v'tzom hachamishi v'tzom hashvi v'tzom asiri." In Zechariah, the Pasuk never tells you what day any of these fasts are on. It tells you the month. And therefore, the Minchas Chinuch says, you know what? I think that's not accidental. I think that when Zechariah said that we have all these fast days to commemorate the Churban, no day was originally picked. Which sort of makes sense. Right? What was picked was months. Why months? Right? He doesn't say this, but there's actually a logic to this. Why would it be a month? Just think about it. Right? This is the problem every time you want to set up a holiday. Right? Or a...
Also, if they didn't have a set calendar at the time, then they didn't want to... Like, you're fasting this day, but if those people weren't... they didn't know when Rosh Chodesh was, it's a problem. So we're just going to have...
Right, so for sure, when you're on a set calendar, it makes a lot of sense. But even if you do have a set calendar, it makes a lot of sense. Sometimes you have a very specific day that you can pin either a celebration on or a commemoration of a catastrophe. 9/11. Okay, it's very clear. Everything from beginning to end happened on 9/11. It all started about 8 some odd in the morning and it was all over by 10 something, right? Sure, there was...
The attack was over.
The attack was over, the buildings fell. Right after the buildings fell, so sure, there were the people who were displaced, there were the people, and especially if you're living in New York, right, 9/11, like, it was 9/11. There was the aftermath of 9/11, but 9/11 was 9/11. I remember it, right? I remember it clearly, right? 9/11, my father worked in the trade centers, my mother was underneath the towers, right? Like, I remember it, right? I was 13, right?
Where was your mom?
What? My mother was underneath. My mother, was one of those people who, you see the pictures of people running, right? My mother was running. Yeah, she had gotten out of the bus, out of the tunnel, on her way up, the tower was hit, they got off the bus, and she ran from, My father was one of those many people who didn't make it to work because of Slichot, right? There's all those stories, and my father was one of them, right? So, and my mother was there, ran from downtown up to Midtown, across the Williamsburg Bridge, and got a ride back to Staten Island, right? So, there's a day, right? That's like the Tisha B'Av of New York, right? It's 9/11. There's a lot of other things that it's much harder, right, to pick a day. Right? Like, what are you going to do? Right? Let's say you're talking about a war. Right? So, a war goes on for weeks, months, right? Whether you're celebrating the catastrophes in the war, whether you're celebrating the victory in the war, right? It's very rare that there is, that decisive of a moment where you can point and say this. So what do we do? We, approximate and pick a day. Right? We do this with little things also. Right, this is right. I don't remember when they did this, but it was 20 years ago when America decided that it was enough that we celebrated the birthday of two presidents. Right, so we made we made President's Day. It's the average. We'll split the difference. The birthday of Lincoln and Washington, they're about the same time. So whatever, it's birthday season, right? Right, it's the Monday, right? It's the Monday around their birthdays. What?
July 4th half the time is not even a date.
Yeah, exactly. It's
make it the weekend instead.
Yeah. So that's what we do, right? Which, so we do it with trite things, but we do it with serious things also. You think about Yom Ha'atzmaut, right? There was a big machloket amongst people. When do you set Yom Ha'atzmaut? Because on the one hand, you'll say, okay, there is an event. There was the Declaration of Independence. Fine. So that happened on the 5th of Iyar. But that was only the beginning, right? Then you actually had to deal with the war, and no one was, it was chaos. That was just the beginning of chaos, right? And you didn't actually secure it until, a while later. And when exactly did we secure it? Did we secure it in 48, in 49, in 56? When exactly did we manage to pull off security from it? So there was a big dispute. What day do you do? So they said, okay, we got to pick an event. But, so they picked the Declaration of Independence. But, you read the historical records, no one was quite clear on this, right? Or, and a sad one, Yom HaShoah. No one knew when to put Yom HaShoah, right? If you look at the minutes from the original meeting, do you know their first suggestion of when to have Yom HaShoah was?
Sabbath.
No, that's when the rabbis wanted it. Do you know when the government's first suggestion was? This was a disaster. This would have been an utter disaster. Tet Vav Nisan. right? Also known as the first day of Pesach.
Why? How did they come up with that one?
So J.J. Schachter has a whole cheer on this, where he said he actually found, like, he went through the documents. He loves this one. He goes through the minutes. He said their first suggestion, and the religious component had a meltdown. It's like, no, you cannot have Yom HaShoah on Tet Vav Nisan. So then they ended up coming up with some sort of compromise, right? And whatever, so they attached it to the uprising of the Warsaw Ghetto.
Pesach wasn't important, or they didn't. We're going to make something special for all countries, and we're doing it on Yom Kippur.
No, so I don't remember what it was. There was some sort of historical event that they wanted to pin it on Tet Vav Nisan, but like the religious community was like, you can't do that. So they put it. So they came up with something. Why? Because what are you actually going to pin? You know, the Holocaust. What day are you going to pin it on? They didn't know what to pin it on, so they pinned it on some random day after Nisan.
Yeah, there's a reason for it, actually.
Oh, for sure, it's the uprising of the Warsaw Ghetto. And
the image of
correct, right, so they ended up... Right, so they wanted it to do. It wanted to be Yom HaGvurah, not just Yom HaShoah, right? Fine. But that was like, eventually they picked that day, because Tet Vav Nisan was out of the question, right? So the Minchas Chinuch argues that at some level, that's sort of what's going on with the fast days. That really, what does Zechariah say? Like, Tzom HaAsiri, right? Tzom HaRivi. In Tammuz, with both Batei Mikdash, it started happening that, right, they breached the wall. Okay, but breaching the wall meant that the days leading up to it, right, the people inside were slowly starving to the point where it was capable, right? Because the siege had been going on for a few months, and they were slowly running out of food. So, sometime in Tammuz is when everything, right, when everything fell apart. Right, it was the 9th and the 1st Beit HaMikdash, it was the 17th and the 2nd. But Zechariah tells you that the fast days were never really about the days. They were about the month. That's why he calls them by their month name. And that's why there's even a machloket in the Gemara. Is it the 10th? Is it the 5th? What is it? Now, this becomes very helpful in the Bayit Sheni, because you say, look, once the fast days were, it was never really the day, right? It was like, you know, it's the way we celebrate Yom HaTzmut now. It's the 5th, it's the 6th, it depends, is it on a Friday, is it on a Shabbat, is it on a Sunday? We'll push it off till the Monday, right? So, Yom HaTzmut, Yom HaZikaron, they're either the 4th and the 5th, or the 5th and the 6th, the 6th and the 7th, whatever we do, right? So, the Minchas Chinuch said, well, that was basically the way Zechariah set up the fast days of the Chorban. Right? It's somewhere around the day, but really, you know, you want to put it a few days earlier, a few days later, that's fine. Right? So what did we do? We collapsed the 9th of Tammuz into the 17th of Tammuz, Chorban Bayit Rishon, Chorban Bayit Sheni. So now, you know...
Well, it gives you a nice round number for 3 weeks.
Yeah, exactly.
Not 3 weeks.
Exactly. It works out well. You know, Tisha B'Av, so it's the 9th, it's the 10th, you know. So some years it's the 9th. Right? I mean, Tisha B'Av is the same thing. As much as we think it's the 9th, on days when it's on Shabbos, so we do it on the 10th. And Shabbos or B'Tamuz.
But there are certain things that you don't do until the afternoon correct. Of the
10th. Right, there are certain things we don't do till then. Right, and then according to Ashkenazi practice, when we push off Tisha B'Av on Shabbos, so on Shabbos itself, there's certain things we don't do. We mourn a little bit on Shabbos, a little bit on Sunday, a little bit on Monday, right? You know, well, not so much on Monday. When it's Nidcha, we don't do it on Monday, right? So in a normal year, it's the 9th and the 10th. On a Shabbos one, so it's a little bit on Shabbos into the 10th. But the Minchas Chinuch presents this theory that later Acharonim develop, which is if Zechariah tells you that the fast days are not really about the day, it's about picking a day in the month. So he says that's why Bayit Rishon and Bayit Sheni can get collapsed. That's why we can push off Tisha B'Av to the 10th and Shabbos B'Tamuz to the 18th. Well,
so if that's the case, okay, when we say, oh, it's a pushed off fast, you have less chiyuv. So if it's really about the month, then the chiyuv.
Right, so according to the Minchas Chinuch, you shouldn't say that. Now, the truth is, we don't pasken that way. Right? We do pasken that it's a weaker fast. And Tisha B'Av might also be a little bit different than the other ones. But you're right. According to Minchas Chinuch, ostensibly, right, the notion of a nidche makes less sense. But he introduces this theory. And the later Mefarshim use this to try to explain all these halachot, why we can have a nidche, and why, you know, again, how we commemorate multiple tragedies that happened around that time. And again, it's the, for lack, right? It's the President's Day of, right, of tragedies, right? It's like, you know, right, you know, some sort of compromise in Tammuz that sort of pins everything on it in Tisha B'Av and, okay. I'm debating how much the halacha. You know what? I'm gonna skip through some of the halacha stuff. But let me. But now,
ask a question.
Yeah.
It's very strange that you write.
Yeah.
He's saying it's an individual thing.
No, it's like a communal thing, right? I mean, the community could have picked, right, whatever they wanted, right? Meaning Zechariah said that, and the first time, the first Beit HaMikdash, they did it on the 9th, and the second Beit HaMikdash, they moved it to the 17th.
The riskiness, right? Though, of that is that it becomes like mezuzah, like it's like, okay, we gotta do a fast.
Look, I mean, to be fair, that is basically the way the poskim treat most of the fast days, because the consensus opinion, I gave you these sources, but I'll say it outside. The consensus opinion, it follows the Ramban, who says that, we saw in the Gemara said that when there is Shmad, when there is destruction, so you have to fast. And when there's shalom, the fast turn into holidays.
That's kind of subjective.
Oh, for sure. But then the Ramban and all the Rishonim really try to figure this out. Okay, what if it's neither Shmad nor shalom?
Wait, how is that subjective? A tragedy is a tragedy.
Right now, we're living in Israel in a free state and all is good, but terrible things happened last week.
So,
this is a time of like...
So that's what the Ramban asks. The Ramban says, what if it's neither Shmad nor Shalom? Right? What if it's not pure Shalom, but it's not Shmad either? So then what's the halacha? The halacha is, and this is what we paskin, like the Ramban, that the fast days are all minhag. You can choose to fast or not. And he notes the community chose to fast, but we didn't have to. Right, there is no halacha.
And he doesn't differentiate between any of these four fasts?
So the Ramban says there's a difference between Tisha B'Av and the other three. The Tisha B'Av remains an obligation. The other three are not. They're only at the level of Minhag, which is why we have so many kulot on them. Right, the reason that anyone who's sick, or anyone who's nursing, or anyone who's pregnant, the other three fasts, we just say don't do it, is because of this Ramban, because that's the way we paskin, that all of them are only custom. Now, there was a whole Zionist movement in the, right, since the state, like religious Zionist push to say, no, this is actually Shat Shalom, not, right, it's not an in-between, it's Shat Shalom, and there are certain sort of fringe parts of the religious Zionist community that they don't fast on the minor fasts.
They don't?
Never heard of that.
And there are some really, really radical parts of the community that won't fast on Tisha B'Av either.
Really?
Right? Really? Yes. Really, really radical parts of the community, which I'm not endorsing, but I'm saying that this exists. But it's all based on this argument. Yes, in Toronto, people love telling me that there was one person who used to give the shir I gave. There was like a shir b'ivrit on Sunday morning, and there was one person who used to give it whose father-in-law was one of these like really radical people, and he would come... You know, he came once just to explain why he holds of the most radical possible construal of this. Right, there are like two fringe groups that do this. There's like certain fringe religious Zionists. Right? Oh, this was an Israeli who was visiting. No, it was like the Israeli, like it was a shliach. It was a shliach whose father-in-law came to visit to give this year to explain why in Israel he doesn't fast on Tisha B'Av. Right? That was his, if I remember correctly. There are also certain segments of like very extreme Mishichist Chabad who do the same thing because Mashiach already came, and you know, they're all, you know, all sorts of interesting things that happen in the community. But you're absolutely right, meaning the subjectivity here, right? Once you open it up and say it's minhag, that opens up a lot of kulot. Now, to be fair, you know, Rabbi Rabinovich has a bit of an extreme position, not that extreme, but Rabbi Rabinovich, based on Rabbi Hananel, thinks that Tisha B'Av actually also has a weakened status, and therefore he applies a lot of the sick halachot to Tisha B'Av. What?
Why is it weakened? Isn't it that you need the Beit HaMikdash if you don't have the Beit HaMikdash?
So the question is, when the Gemara says that that the four fast days are only fully obligatory in a Shad HaShmad, right, does that include Tisha B'Av or not? So most Rishonim, most postgame assume not, that Tisha B'Av, because Tisha B'Av is more intense, so Tisha B'Av stands alone. That even if the other three have become weakened, Tisha B'Av is not. That's why it's 25 hours, that's why it has all...
Wait,
right? Yeah.
I'm sorry, I think I was misunderstanding before. It's not that the fast themselves is because it's a day of sadness, it's keeping the fast in a time...
In a time of sadness, correct. Right, because once it becomes a happy time, so the... Right, it becomes less important to commemorate the sadness. And so the Ramban argues we're in the middle state, and therefore the community could have accepted not to fast. We accepted to fast, But the Ramban says, because it's only a minhag, that's why the other three are not 25 hours, that's why we only don't eat and drink, we don't limit bathing and shoes and all that. That's why sick people, pregnant people, you know, don't fast on these. Right? My kids asked this morning, right? Ima, why are you eating? Because she's nursing, right? I'm not, because, as I said to them, I can't nurse, right? I can't get pregnant, so I fast, right? So Ramban says, now again, Rabinovich says maybe even Tisha B'Av is sort of like that.
That's why we say only Yom Kippur is actually stated in the Torah as a fast.
Correct.
That's why.
Correct. Now, if we come back to the Avudraham, though, right? The Avudraham suggests, right, that was how we started. Right, the Avudraham says, sorry, the Avudraham in number 12, right, again, so remember how we got here. The Avudraham has this bizarre position that says that in a certain sense, Asara B'Tevet is stricter than every other fast, with the exception of Yom Kippur, and we would fast even on Shabbos. Why would we fast on Shabbos if we don't on Tisha B'Av, we don't on Shivas or B'Tammuz?
What's the name of this guy?
Avudraham. So Avudraham is like, the Avudraham is the classic medieval work on tefillah, right, and other things, but mostly tefillah. Right, the Avudraham is like, he's the Beit Midrash of the Ramban, like two generations later. In Spain, you're talking about, you know, you're talking, trying to think, I think two generations after the Ramban, you're talking 14th century. He writes this Sefer on tefillah, which becomes the classic medieval work on tefillah. So he says that Asara B'Tevet is unique because we'd fast even on Shabbat. Okay, so how could that be the case, right? So the first clue is that he quotes a pasuk and he says that Asara B'Tevet is unique because Be'etzem Hayom Hazeh. The pasuk that describes Asara B'Tevet says on that self same day, right? Be'etzem Hayom Hazeh, on that day. So, right, and we're going to come to that pasuk.
But it's not a combination of certain things. It's
exactly. So what certain Achronim point out is, wait a second. If the Minchat Chinuch is right, that all the fast days are, you know,
random.
President's days, right? There's some sort of compromises. But the pasuk describes Asara B'Tevet for some reason as something about that self same day, Be'etzem Hayom Hazeh. So maybe there's something that's different. Maybe Asara B'Tevet is not like that. Now, there are some technical answers that are given by the Achronim. So, for example, the Or Sameach says, you know what? The reason that you can fast Asara B'Tevet on Shabbat is because it doesn't violate the biblical problem, as opposed to Tisha B'Av, which does. Because he suggests that it's only forbidden biblically to fast on Shabbat, with the exception of Yom Kippur, if you fast all of Shabbat. But the minor fasts are only half day, and therefore it's no biblical violation. And therefore you could theoretically fast, which he proves from the fact that if you have a bad dream, right, and it helps you cathartically to fast, because you think that will prevent the dream from coming true, you're allowed to. We let you fast. You have to make up the fast by fasting again, right? Fast to make up for the fast, but fine. Most people don't do this. There are, right, most people don't get
the negatives make a positive.
Exactly. Look, most people don't get creeped out. Most people aren't creeped out enough by their dreams that they want to like fast to make sure their dream doesn't come true. I've met people who've done it, right?
Whoa.
This is one of those things. Like, you know,
a lot of cringe people.
Well, look, Look, for 3 years I was, you know, one of the rabbis in a shul of 800 families, plus another 150, you know, people who daven there or like half members or whatever. So yeah, you have 1,000 member families. So yes, I've been, you know, Sarai Karopkin pulled me over at some point. He's like, what? The Bayit.
The Bayit?
Was one of the rabbis in the Bayit. There were three, but I was one of them. Sarai Karopkin called me over and he said, look, I have what? Yeah.
Oh really? I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I'm from Allentown. He was with us before.
And so, was Rachel Chiner.
And Rabbi Chochiner's there now, right?
Yes, Rachel Chiner started.
Rosh Kola.
Yeah, exactly. So I was the Skan Rosh Kola. So I was half, you know.
You want me to get you guys a cup of coffee?
Yeah. This is how we start. This is how Rachel Chiner started his Russia, right? Rachel Chiner started his Russia when he did a Shabbaton, and he said, "Not everybody knows that." You know, that I was in Allentown. I took over for Eric Kropkin. But he said even less people know that when the that. Right, Kropotkin's name was originally in the mix for the Kolel, right? And he said, right? And then he went to LA. So he said, had Right Kropotkin taken that, then probably a year later, right, when the job opened up at the Buy-It, I would have applied for that, and then we'd be in the same place, but our roles would have been reversed. So yes, it's a Toronto, Allentown, it's all a nice big mix. So they're both wonderful. So Eric Kropotkin at some point pulled me over and he said, I have a woman who had a bad dream and she wants to do a Tavat Chalom, right? Which is one of the creepiest things you can ever do because you sit there in a Bezdin and you like magically, it's from the Gemara, but like you like, you know, they talk about the dream and then you say, no, the dream should be interpreted only for good. And there's all formula you say to be Meitiv Chalom. I've done this more than once. And once when I was in Staten Island, it's like in high school, someone asked me to be part of a Bezdin. He was fasting because he had such a bad dream and he wanted a Bezdin. So this does happen.
It can be very scary.
Yeah. Okay. Right. So the Orz Mehech, right, notes that, right, that it's not forbidden to fast on half a day, and therefore any of the minor fasts theoretically you could have on Shabbat. We just don't, right? Why? So then he says, that's what the Avodramam says. Look, it's not a technical violation. You could push them off. So all the other ones, especially if you believe like the Minchas Chinuch, that it's just, you know, pick a day in the month. Okay, so we push it off to Sunday. But because Aser B'Tevet says Be'etzem Hayom Hazeh, which indicates that there's something unique about this day, it's not a compromise averaging of tragedies. So since it doesn't violate the biblical problem, so then we actually would theoretically fast on Aser B'Tevet itself, even on Shabbat. Right, and Reb Chaim says something like this as well. Okay, but you know there are different variations of this in the Achronim. Okay, fine, but that only begs the question. Okay, what is it? What exactly is it about Aser B'Tevet? Well, what happened that was so bad? So, I was on my way here. I was listening to Shir by Rev Daniel Feldman, where he notes that several Achronim say, well, the Avudraham says, "Be'etzem Hayom Hazeh, kemo b'Yom Kippurim." What? In what sense could it be like Yom Kippur? So they said, "Well, the prophecy that we're talking about is the beginning of the process." And they say, "Look, by the time you got to Shivasar B'Tammuz, and by the time you got to Tisha B'Av and Tzom Gedaliah, the destruction already started happening. Aseret B'Tevet was the beginning. Aseret B'Tevet was the beginning." It was when Hashem said, he first sent Yechezkel to warn everybody and say, this is coming. Right? Know that this is coming. At that point, what should they have done? They should have done tshuva. Right? Because Hashem, you know, at that point, nothing really happened. Right? Nothing really happened. They surrounded the city. We've had other close calls with surrounding the city. Right? Most notably in Tanakh, we have the story of Chizkiyahu. Right? Yerushalayim is surrounded. It's about to be destroyed by Ashur, right? By Malchut Ashur, by Sancheriv, and it doesn't happen. Chizkiyahu davens to Hashem, and he says, "Listen, they're blaspheming you. They think that you are like all the pagan gods who didn't manage to defend the people from Ashur. You have to take them out." And then God performs a miracle, and at night he sends his malach and kills 180,000 soldiers of Sancheriv, and nothing comes from it, right? They just go home, right? Or whoever's left, which is basically nobody, right? Whatever's left, right? Sancheriv turns back, he goes home. The city was surrounded, and it was done. Why? Because Chizkiyahu davened, and he got tshuva, and he got people to, right, to commit to God. So several modern commentaries say, what is he really getting at? In what sense is Aser B'Tevet like Yom Kippur? So they say it's like Yom Kippur because it was supposed to be the wake-up call. Right? Do tshuva. And therefore, they argue, or Pinkus argues this, for example, it's not that Aser B'Tevet is more stringent or worse catastrophically than the other fast days. It's the opposite. Asar B'Tevet, in the grand scheme of things, in terms of what it commemorates, big deal. Right? Nothing happened yet. It's a different kind of a fast. What do they argue? They say, look, what type of fast is antithetical to Shabbos? Mourning. Tisha B'Av. Shavasar B'Tammuz Tzom Gedalia. But Asar B'Tevet was the beginning. It was the wake-up call. It was supposed to be Yom Kippur-esque. It was supposed to be tshuva-like. And we know from Yom Kippur that fasts which are about tshuva are not antithetical to Shabbat. So Rav Pinkus says, you know what the Avodah is saying? The Avodah is saying you mix everything together. First of all the other fasts are mourning fasts. Second of all, they're tied to a date. Asar B'Tevet, they're not tied to a date. Asar B'Tevet is tied to a date. What was the date? The date when the city was surrounded and God gave his warning and said, know that this is, it's now or never. And we commemorate the Yom Kippur-esque potential that was in Asar B'Tevet. And therefore, it's really a fast of tshuva more than a fast of mourning. And therefore, he says, that's what the Avodah is saying. It's like Yom Kippur. It's not really a mourning fast. It's commemorating the possibility we had to do tshuva. We didn't take it.
That's the tragic part.
Good. So this is where I said, right, up until what I just said. So up until what I just said, right, is the classic version of this shir. And now, sorry, what's your name?
Yonina.
What Yonina says is where I want to take it, because I don't buy anything I don't buy what I just said. Right? I don't buy it. Right? Because it's very nice to say that that was the wake-up call, that that was the day they should have done tshuva, and therefore it's not really about the catastrophe. But what are you talking about? Right? That is a catastrophe. Right? The catastrophe happened because they didn't do tshuva. So I want to take a totally different one. Now I want to go back to the Tanakh.
We have plenty of times we don't do tshuva.
We have plenty of times.
We don't fast for every one of those.
Good. So what is it? So I don't think it's just the fact we didn't do tshuva. I think something much more sinister is going on in Asar B'Tevet. And here we have to go to the Psukim. So let's go to 22. Right? And this, as far as I know, I've never seen anyone say this before. But this is my theory. So let's look at the Psukim in Yechezkel. Yechezkel says, "Vahi dvar Adonai elai b'shanat shiit b'chodesh asiri b'asor l'chodesh l'imor." Right, this is the nevuah on the tenth day, the 10th month, the 9th year. Ben Adam. This is how Yechezkel is always referred to, right? Human being, you. Ktov lecha et shem hayom et etzem hayom hazeh. Samach melech bavel Yerushalayim etzem hayom hazeh. Write this day down. U'mishol beit ha'meri mashal v'amarta lehem kol mar Adonai Elohim. Shvot hasir, shvot v'gam yitzok b'mayim. Right? The pot has been stirred. Right? Tell them that this is the day the pot has begun to be stirred. Be'etzem hayom hazeh. What does be'etzem hayom hazeh mean? What does that mean? What does it mean, the self-same day? So be'etzem hayom hazeh throughout Chumash always means the same thing, which is a turning point in history. And look at number 23. Be'etzem hayom hazeh banoach v'shem v'cham v'yafet b'nei noach v'eshet noach v'shlosh nishe v'anav itam el ha'teva. On that very day, Noach went with his children into the teva. Now, if we jump back to that moment, right? Why be'etzem hayom hazeh? So Rashi, in every place, says, why be'etzem hayom hazeh? Right? He says it doesn't mean the self-same day. It means in the middle of the day, like at noon, high noon. Because Rashi says what it means is that the people of the time of Noah wanted to stop him from going into the teva. God said, good luck stopping me. So I'm going to make Noah go at high noon. So you can't say, oh, Noah got away from us and went at night. But had it been at high noon, we would have seen him and stopped him. No, I'm going to send him in when everybody can... What? Yeah, but exactly, right? So in the middle of the day, right, it's the opposite of Chatzilah, but in the middle of the day, Noah went in.
Okay, I just want you to know that now I have the theme to the good, the bad, and the ugly playing in my head, you know? That's high noon.
Yeah.
And now it's
going to
be in my head.
Okay, perfect. So that drama is perfect,
yeah.
Right? But the simple pshat is not what Rashi says. The simple pshat is, Be'etzem hayom hazeh is on that fateful day. Right? On that fateful day.
That's Rashi?
No, that's not Rashi. Right? Rashi says, Be'etzem hayom hazeh means high noon. right? The simple pshat is it means, right, on that fateful day, on that day when everything changed, right, the world was about to be destroyed and started anew, Noah went into the teva. Number 24. Vaikach Avraham et Yishmael ben Oved kol yilidei veit Oved kol meknat kaspoz kol zachar banshei beit Avraham vayamal et besar latam be'etzem hayom azek asher diber ito Elohim. On that day, everything changed because Avraham gave a brit milah to his family. That is the beginning of the covenant. Or number 25. Ushmartem et amatzot. Right, keep the matzah, right? Remember the matzah. Keep etzem hayom hazeh utzeiti etzivoteichem eretz Mitzrayim ushmartem et hayom hazeh ledoroteichem chukat olam. Right, on that same day, on that fateful day, or on that great day, they left Egypt. Right, etzem hayom hazeh is whenever, good or bad, is that, right, momentous occasion. Right, the day the world was destroyed, the day the world that the Jews left Egypt, the day that we had Brit Milah, good, bad, on that day. The exception in Chumash is, before we get to the exception, one more rule, number 27, is Vaydaber Adonai Moshe be'etzem hayom hazeh le'mor alei el havarim hazeh har nevo asher be'eretz Moav asher p'nei recho re'eid eretz Kenan asher ani noten l'bnei Yisrael achuza umut bahar asher ata oleh sham avei aseif el amecha. God says to Moshe on that fateful day, go up, it's time to die. Right, and that is the end of the Torah. Right, the end of the Torah is Moshe's death. Right, you think about the end of the Torah. Right, it makes it clear that the death of Moshe isn't just the death of Moshe. Velo kam navi k'Moshe od asher diber. Right, there is no other prophet who spoke face to face. Right, it's meant to be dramatic. Right, it's the end of an era. Right, etzem hayom hazeh is always the end or beginning of an era. It's a momentous occasion that changed history, the destruction of the world. It's a big one. Right, the introduction of the covenant of Avram. Big one. Death of Moshe. End of face-to-face prophecy. End of the Torah. Big day. Yitziat Mitzrayim. Big day. There's one exception in Chumash, which is really quite striking, which is number 26. Ach v'asor l'chodesh ha-shvi hazeh yom ha-kipurim hu. Mikra kodesh yelachem minitem nafshoteichem mikravtem yishel Adonai. V'kol melacha lo ta'asu be'etzem ha-yom hazeh ki yom kipurim hu l'chaper lechem l'fnei Adonai lechem. Yom Kippur, we call Pe'etzem Hayom Hazeh.
Because it could be.
Ah, perfect, because it could be transformative.
Every year it is.
And every year it is. Or as my teacher Rosenzweig likes saying, right? Rosenzweig likes saying that if you read the Psukim carefully, Yom Kippur is not a yearly event. It's a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity that happens every year. Wow. Right? And he said, what's his proof? What's his proof that the halacha is that the clothes of the Kohen Gadol have to be buried after Yom Kippur, and you need new ones the next year. Right? That's how we relate to it. So Yom Kippur, even though it happens every year, is a life-changing experience every year. It's not Yom Kippur again. It's another opportunity to change the course of history. Right? It's Etzem Hayom Hazeh.
If you're really lucky, then you're a different person.
Correct.
Yom Kippur.
Exactly. You're a new person. That's the point. Right, that's why, and Sir Rosenzweig likes pointing out the halachot go in this direction, that the Yom Kippur has to redress it, right? The Kohen Gadol has to redress in new clothes because he's not the same person he was last year. That's the notion of tshuva. Tshuva is as transformative, as, you know, as paradigm shattering, as Yitziat Mitzrayim, right? As so this, if you just took it here, you'd say, okay, so I understand where Rav Pinkus, for example, got his argument that Asar B'Tevet is the potential Yom Kippur, except, and this is where I diverge. Ever learned Yechezkel? Ever sat down and learned Yechezkel? I just started with one student. It is so depressing. Yechezkel is so depressing. Why is it depressing? Because Yechezkel starts off not like Yeshayahu. Right? What's Yeshayahu? How does Yeshayahu start off? Right? Yeshayahu starts off Chazon, right? Chazon Yeshayahu Ben Amotz. Right, it's the Haftarah of Shabbat Chazon. What is it? Do tshuva. You people are turning instances to stone v'amorah, but you can turn it around. You can turn it around. Just be just and take care of the almanah and take care of the yatom and take care. You can turn it around. Things are bad, but it's not over yet. Yechezkel does not start that way at all. Yechezkel starts off, and God says to Yechezkel, listen, it's all over. It's over. You could go ahead. Go talk to the people. And you know what that's going to get you? Nothing. Says absolutely nothing. He tells him over and over, they're not going to listen to you. They're going to ignore you. Nothing's going to change. Where is he? He's not in Eretz Yisrael. He's in Bavel. Right? He's in Galut. And he says, go to the people in Gola. And you know what I want you to tell them? I want you to give them Mussar. You know why? Not because of Yeshayahu. Right? There's no hope. Right? Because I need them to know, right, that there was a Navi be Yisrael. I need them to know that when I actually come around to destroying the Beit HaMikdash, I want them to know that they were warned. Right? There's no hope. They're not changing. It's just not happening anymore. There is no hope. I'm telling you. Don't get depressed. Right? Yechezkel, don't give up. He tells Yechezkel, he said, you're going to get depressed because you're going to think that your job is to get the Jews to do tshuva and they're not going to do it. Don't be depressed. I have no, right? There is no hope. They're not doing tshuva. It's not happening. They're not listening to you. Your job is to yell into the void. Right? Just scream into the void. Because when we actually get to the Churban, right, someone will remember that there was a crazy person yelling and saying that Churban was coming because of your sins. It's quite depressing, right? Yechezkel is just this, like, it's this super depressing sefer. It's hopeless. It's totally, totally hopeless, right? Look back at the pasuk, right? That's how Yechezkel opens. Right, Yechezkel, Hashem tells him, there's no hope. And then you get these endless prakim of Yechezkel, where it's over and over, God tells him, please, go to the Jewish people. I know it's hopeless. Just go. Just talk to them. No, please, just really, just go. And then he gives them all these, like, symbolic acts to do, right? Eat dung, right? Like, horrible things. Yechezkel's like, I just can't do this. Right? He's like, I can't eat human dung. I'm a Kohen. Right? I haven't eaten anything tummy in my life. Right? What do you want from me? Right? Like, Yechezkel is just begging God. Like, how hopeless. You know, and God just tells him, be hopeless. Do these symbolic acts to be hopeless. I want everyone to remember that you were there. Right? It is a horrible, like, you just, like, go through the book. And every time he tells him, Ben Adam. Right? That's how he's introduced. It's like, you know, My poor human being, right? It's son of man, right? It's this depressing, like, you are just, he's speaking to his humanity, literally, right? He's speaking to his humanity, right? It's a desperate book. That comes to a culmination on what day? Asar B'Tevet, where what does he say? Back in the first Nevuah, he says, Ben Adam, K'tov lecha et shem hayom hazeh. Right? Et shem hayom et etzem hayom hazeh. He said, today. Right? All that you've been working for, you know, you've been screaming into the void for all those years. Now it's coming to a fore. I told you they weren't going to listen, so destruction was inevitable. Now. Right now. Write down this day, because all that hope, all that desperation, all that depression, all that lack of hope that I've been, you know, that has sunk you into the depression that you read throughout Yechezkel, it's all been coming down to right now. Because today, Samach Melch Bavel Yerushalayim Be'etzem Hayom Hazeh, he tells him in Galut, right? This isn't Yeshayahu, this isn't Yerushalayim. There's no hope, there's nothing he can do. He's hearing it from afar. Right? This is like, he stands there hopeless, right? Miles away. And God tells him, you know what I've been telling you is going to happen because no one's going to listen? You may not see it, but I'm telling you. Write it down, because in a few months you're going to find out, right, that today was the beginning of the end. U'mishol el beit hameri mashal. Tell those rebellious people this mashal, that shvat hasir shvot v'gam yisok b'mayim. The pot. Right, the pot is being stirred. This pot is starting to boil. Right, tell them in Bavel that the news that they're going to hear from here on in is all bad. Right, brace them, because it's all beginning. Right, they may not see it. They may be miles away. They may only get it as a shmur rechoka. They'll hear it later on. But warn them that all the news they hear from here on in is going to be bad, because it's all, there is no turning back. Right, it's all destruction from here on. I think that, as has been pointed out, to take the happy version of the Avodraham and say, oh, it's like Yom Kippur. They could have done tshuva is to totally miss the tragedy of Asar B'Tevet, as Yechezkel actually describes it. The tragedy of Asar B'Tevet isn't that it was, right? It's not that it's not a hopeful day that could have been Yom Kippur, which is more like Shabbat. What does he say? Right? It's, in what sense is it Yom Kippur-like? It's not Yom Kippur-like in the sense that it was Yom Kippur. It was the day, it's the opposite of Yom Kippur. It's where God, Yom Kippur is the day where we have the opportunity to rewrite history in the positive by changing our ways. Asar B'Tevet was the day Yechezkel was told by God, look, it's been hopeless for a long time. But for you, it was always hopeless, right? Yeshayahu, the people who were actually in Yerushalayim, I was telling them to give Musar, right? For years, I was hoping that Yeshayahu would change them. I was hoping that Amos would change them. And take your pick of the Navi that I was hoping would change them. But it didn't work. And at some point, God says, it's over. We're done. Right? The only way for things to change is for me to stop giving them another chance. It's for there to be consequences. And he tells him, mark this day as the beginning of all that tshuva that I was waiting for, that it never came. This was the day when God gave up. And God said, I'm done. I am done asking for tshuva. I am starting the consequences now. And expect catastrophe. Expect that the only way we're going to get out of this is if I destroy the Beit HaMikdash, they go into Galut, and we start again. Right? That I actually punish them, there are consequences, then maybe there'll be tshuva in 70 years from now. But you want to mark the moment at which God gave up on the Jewish people and said, I'm tired of having all my Yeshayahus going and tell people you're Stom and Amorah, just do tshuva, you have a chance, Tzion b'mishpati padeh. Right? This is not Yom Kippur. This is the anti-Yom Kippur.
It's parallel in my mind to Noach and his family going to the Tevat.
Exactly.
Only through the destruction can
there be rebuilding. Exactly.
So he's saying you're going into the destruction now so that there so can that, be a better thing.
Yeah. Right. He's saying, but this is a paradigm shift, right? This is a end of an era. Right? He's saying it's the anti Yom Kippur. Yom Kippur is when I give you the opportunity to change without. Right? What do we say on Yom Kippur, right? It's forgive us because it was Bishkagah. Forgive us because we're doing tshuva. Asar B'Tevet, God tells Yechezkel, mark this day, because this is the day when I said you didn't do it. I gave you opportunity after opportunity for decades. I sent you Navi after Navi after Navi after Navi. But Yechezkel is the Navi of desperation. He's the Navi of, right, of depression. The Navi who says, right, who God tells him, they're not changing. I'm telling you, it's not happening. But I want there to be a Navi who will mark it and say, God warned you. He told you this was coming. And then after all that, right, all that anguish the Yechezkel goes through, God says, it's built up to this moment. Right? I told you that I want you to have marked it. I want people to know that there was a Navi, even if it's not going to help. Today, right, I give up. Today, Yerushalayim is surrounded. Today, we begin the destruction. Today we begin anew. Right? Today we begin the Noach moment. Yes. Right? We destroy the world to rebuild it. We destroy the Beit HaMikdash to rebuild the Jewish people in 70 years. Right? We go into Galut to cleanse them of their mistakes so they go back and they rebuild again.
So it's only associated with Korban Rayat Rishon.
What?
So it's only associated.
So it's Korban Rayat Rishon. It really is Korban Rayat Rishon. Right? It's, and now what's the Be'etzem HaYom Hazeh? And this is where I said no one that I know of has said this, is that, right, look, the Bnei Yisachar in 30 just says, oh, it's the Tchilat HaPuranut, and the beginning is always the worst, right, like we say by Tisha B'Av, right, that Tisha B'Av, we fast on the 9th, even though it mostly burns on the 10th, because the beginning is always the worst. But I think it's so much more than that. I think what the Avodraham is getting at when he says it's like Yom Kippur, it's Be'etzem Hayom Hazeh, and therefore it even happens on Shabbos, it's so intense, right? It's not this You know, it's not a technicality. Like, or some Ech takes it. Oh, it's only a half day fast. Okay, right. And it's not even the happy version of Rav Pinkus, which is, oh, it's like Yom Kippur. It was the day when everything, when they had the chance to do tshuva, when they could have turned it back. I mean, you can only say that if you never read Yechezkel. Like, that's a very logical thing to say, right? Logically speaking, if you asked me without knowing Yechezkel, what day was the best opportunity for tshuva? I would have said Asar B'Teve. Nothing really happened. The city was surrounded, right? It could have been Yom Kippur. So it's not really a mourning fast day, right? It's remembering Yom Kippur. But once you look at Yechezkel, that's not what Yechezkel says. Yechezkel doesn't say, oh, there was an opportunity to do tshuva. Yechezkel said there was an opportunity to do tshuva 30 years ago. Right? It's too late. The Etzem Hayom Hazeh is God says I have to change paths. Right? Whether it was Noach, where I said the only way to change paths is to destroy the world to rebuild it. Or it was Avram, which was a positive one, where I said it's time to pick a nation, which is going to have a covenant with me. Or it was Yitzhak Mitzrayim, when I chose a nation. Right? There are moments in history, good and bad, where there are paradigm shifts.
How many other bits?
That's it.
Are there?
That's it. I think we've just done the six.
No, that are negative. Were there any other negatives?
So Noach, right? Noach is Betzem Hayom Hazeh. It's destruction to rebuild the world.
Yeah, but it's the focus of Noach and his family. It's the focus of...
Correct. This is the only one that's clear, presented as...
The only one as like is...
Depressing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's no
like really super. There's no even mention of what's going to happen at the end.
There's no mention of hope here. We can say yes, there's hope to rebuild like the Noah.
But it's not explicit. Ever. Correct.
There's no explicit hope here. This is destruction.
Yeah. Period. And that I think is the sort of depressing truth as to what the Abu Dhabi is actually getting at. The Abu Dhabi is saying all the other ones marked a historical event. Or let me put it differently. And this is really what I think the key is. The other one's marked a historical event. What does God say? It's not really the historical event that is so depressing about Asar B'Teivet. Because a historical event, big deal. He said that was the day when God said, I give up. Right? It's not the historical event. Right? It's not the fact that the city was surrounded. It's the fact that God says to Yechezkel, mark this day, because today was the day when I gave up on the Jewish people. Right? When I said, it's over. You are going to face the consequences. I'm not waiting for your tshuva anymore. Right? You are going to suffer. We'll figure it out later. Right? Whether we rebuild. Right? When you read Yechezkel and you realize that all that depression that's been building up for 20 prakim in Yechezkel comes to a fore when God says to Yechezkel, mark today as the day when I give up on the Jewish people. Right? Then you realize that the Abu Dhabi says, look, there aren't many things that I would fast for on Shabbos. But this is really bad. Right? This is really bad. Right? This in a certain sense, and what is it? It's not the historical event. What we're mourning is the way our relationship with God changed on that day. Right? It was the day when God gave up on us. Right? It's the day when God gave up and said, I'm setting it in motion.
So you
right?
didn't fast on Shabbat.
So the Abu Dhabi says you would, because it's so bad.
It never falls on Shabbat.
Right? It never falls on Shabbat. But the Abu Dhabi says...
Isn't it the opposite?
So that's what Rav Pinkus says, is, oh, you shouldn't be able to write fast unless it must be tshuva. Right? Unless it was tshuva, it was a happy-ish fast. I think the Abu Dhabi is saying, no, ironically, right? There's certain things that are... So, you're rest, yes, it's antithetical to Shabbos.
Yeah, but it's, why wouldn't all the others... You know, how is that? I don't understand how that's different.
So, because he says the other ones, what is he really saying? He's saying the other ones, they mark historical events, right? Okay. They mark historical events. Historical events happened around this period. So yeah, we won't mark it. We won't mourn for that historical event, so we'll do it tomorrow. But if you look at the Pasuk in Yechezkel, it's not the historical event that we're mourning. God says, it's the change of relationship with me, right? God says, it's you and me that have changed today, right? It's I give up on you. Right, mark this day down. The fact that I'm letting the Babylonians surround the city is just a, right? That's just a symptom. Today is the day where, right, our relationship is poisoned beyond repair, right? Or without at least catastrophe first, right? Without a Noach-esque moment. And I think that's sort of the depressing truth
very
of what,
depressing.
Very depressing, but what the Abu Dhabi is getting at, right? Now, that's depressing, because now the irony, right, is that Asar B'Teivet, because it's so short, right, we don't even think about what is it we're mourning on Asar B'Teivet, right? Politically, it's the least egregious, right? Physically, it's the least taxing of the fast days. But what Yechezkel does theologically, right, it's the worst. It was the day when God said, "We give up on you. I give up
on
you."
That's not what everybody says, so I think that's why, because whenever you hear it, and even what we said is, oh, the city was surrounded, and that's really what people...
Correct, and that's where, when you actually look back in Yechezkel, you realize that that's not what it is, right? That God's saying, it's the day when he turns to them, and he says, Beit HaMeri, right? Tell those rebels, right, that it's, right, the pot has stirred, right? The pot is, right, that it's overflowing. It's the day that God just says, there have to be consequences, right? That's sad. That's like, that's depressing, right? That's something that the Avodah says, it's the antithesis of Yom Kippur. It's where God says, you don't have a chance to do tshuva anymore, right? Or at least not going to be easy, right? You got to turn the tide, which has already started to flow, right? This is not, you're preventing something before it happens. It's begun, right? You've got to...
Kippur, the gates are open.
And this is when... This is when they close, right? This is when he says, it's pretty much over, right? Now, there's hope deep down. Right? There's the Noach moment, right? The hope is that God says, I'm not killing you, right? I'm sending you to Galut, and then the rest of Yeshayahu, right, is the hope. Yeshayahu says, Ezer Sefer Kritut, I never divorced you, right? It's only temporary, don't worry, right? As bad as it is, it's, right, this is reversible, right? But that moment where God changed the relationship, where he said there have to be consequences, right? That sometimes, right, the day when we commemorate the fact that God says, at some point, I don't just give you another chance. There's a limit to how many chances I give you. That day is a Asar B'Tevet. Right? So for me, and like I said, I haven't seen anyone say it. Partially, no one really wants to... No one...
Rosh Shachter gave a shiur here Friday night, and I actually missed it when my husband gave me a summary. And the summary of the summary in 5 seconds was that, right, he presented all the stuff that you did, and then he said, so what's so different and important, you know about Asar B'Tevet? And he said, like I said, I'm paraphrasing, it's... Why is this the Yom HaKadosh? This, it was the beginning of all the catastrophes that will happen in the future. But it's also the Yom HaDin of Bniyat Bayit Shlishi. And that this is the day that Hashem is dayan on us if we're going to have the Beis HaMikdash on the coming Tisha B'Av.
Okay, so that's nice. I have to see that source. Right? So that is a good positive spin. I'm glad I have a positive. Okay, so I'm glad we have a positive spin to it.
Right? That was really depressing.
Right? So that's the... look. The Noach moment would indicate that, right? That that even in the deepest of moments, right, that's when the seeds are you know, it's a nice clean sofer. I can fit it in with it. But again, that's where I said no one has, I think, looked at the psukim and said that's really what's going on. Again, it's depressing, but admittedly, on a Asar B'Tevet, when you want to feel the fast, right, you know, I don't think it's a happy day. You read Yechezkel and you realize this is about as dark as it gets. Yes, the hope is there that, right, God says, I'm sending you to Galut, to reset the clock, so just like Noach, you can rebuild a better world, right? And the Jews then build Bayit Sheni, and apparently, I like this Chum Sofer, right? Asar B'Tevet is the day when God says, okay, right? In the future, it will be your Yom Kippur, which might be the irony, right? Is that, right? Then it was the anti-Yom Kippur, but God says forever, according to the Chum Sofer, this is your Yom Kippur for the Beit HaMikdash. It's your chance to forge something new, good, so we can end on a positive note. So everyone should have a easy and meaningful fast, and hopefully, right, we'll internalize the somewhat depressing lessons, but take the hope, right, and rebuild a more positive narrative of Jewish history than the one that Yechezkel described as the original Asar
B'Tevet. When it became with the Nebuah of Yirmiyahu, it was always like, do tshuva, tshuva. Now it's like, okay, you've gotten past the point. No matter what tshuva you do now, it's not even going to help you because now the destruction is coming.
Exactly.
I'm sorry, my hands are I'm breaking my eyes. You know, so it's like this Yechezkel is the culmination of what Hashem had already told Yirmiyahu to say, you know, listen, I gave you they're going to come and they're going to hurt you, but the fight doesn't have to be destroyed. But then you went past that and you didn't do tshuva then. You didn't do it then. You didn't do it then. So now Yechezkel comes and
Okay, well, I hope, even though it is a bit depressing, that, you know, we need a little bit of, I don't know if it's inspiration, but at least a motivation on the fast day. So
tell everybody that